forces strike the edge of ecology.
My name is Nigel Grace. This evening, I'm going to be taking you on a journey into the physical realms, the energetic realms, and the spiritual realms of the Bosnian pyramids. And this is a personal story. Everything I say tonight is about my experience directly while I've been helping excavating in Bosnia. I also wanted to let you know that I'll be making some conclusions tonight, some opinions, some ideas of what this is all about. And although perhaps you might think what I'm going to say may not be very scientific, I would say it has a lot of intuitive science to it. So perhaps I can call myself tonight an intuitive scientist. I'm not an archaeologist. I am a volunteer and a researcher. And I was first drawn to the Bosnian pyramids because I saw an interview in Bosnian language with some subtitles in 2011, and I immediately contacted this gentleman, Sam Osmanagic, who was giving the interview, and asked him if I could come to visit the Bosnian pyramids, because when I saw him giving this interview, and that there was this image behind him, something suddenly connected with me. And I felt it's really important. In fact, I've got to go. In fact, it's already been decided. I'm going. But I didn't know where it was or who this man was. But after searching him for a while on the internet, I found an email for him with the Russian Academy of Natural Sciences. And the next day, I got an email back from him to say, yes, please come as a volunteer. Sam, as he likes to be known, is actually Bosnian, but he spent most of his adult life researching pyramids in South America, in Mexico, and he actually, one of his PhDs is actually in Mayan culture and Mayan civilization. And he was invited back to Bosnia by the Bosnian University, and one of the archaeologists asked him to come and have a look at an oddly triangular-looking hill, and that was the beginning of the story. This is an aerial view of the pyramid. When I first arrived, I just read Wikipedia to find out that it was actually a hoax. So I was feeling a bit bad about myself. Oh no, I've let myself in for something again. But when I looked out of the window of the airplane, I wondered whether I could see it, and there it was. And immediately I got a feeling straight to my mind or my heart. It was rather like a little message saying, well done, you've come. This is the village of Visoko, just outside of Sarajevo. And this is what it looks like from the ground. Obviously, this is a beautiful day, but Bosnia is an incredibly beautiful country. And you notice the first thing about this structure is it's covered with trees, it's covered with green. It doesn't look anything like the pyramids in Egypt. But immediately, I think you can see what Sam saw when he first was taken to this structure, that there seemed to be a triangular shape to it. It's absolutely enormous, by the way. It's 220 meters high, which is a third of the height, again, of the Egyptian pyramid, the Cheops's pyramid in Giza. So the Egyptian pyramid would be something like this. So you can see when you're in a little village that it's absolutely dominant and enormous. I joined a team of volunteers. There I am, right there. And volunteers can come from anywhere. You don't have to be an archaeologist. All you have to be willing to do is work 6 hours a day for 2 weeks for no pay. When I arrived there, the first thing I said, well, why did you come? Why are you interested? What brought you here? And without exception, everyone said, I just feel I had to be here. I heard about it or I saw it and I just felt the calling to be here. And it's remarkable that the people who come are not necessarily academics or archaeologists. They're just people who are alive with interest and passion about discovering truth. This is from all over the world. We've got Denmark, Croatia, England, America, Australia. There are about 360 volunteers this summer, which actually makes it the most active archaeological site in the world. And it is the least known and the least reported archaeological site in the world.
Further away.
Yes, between the two.
My qualifications to speak to you tonight is that I pushed a wheelbarrow for 2 weeks, for 6 hours a day. I've actually been three times, and I'm going back again for the December the 21st to film the last sunrise of the Mayan calendar, and then the first sunrise of the New Age from the top of the Bosnian Pyramid. So my job was pushing this wheelbarrow. Now, you might wonder, it doesn't look like I'm on top of a pyramid here. I'm actually inside tunnels that are underneath the pyramid and connecting different structures that we've also identified to be artificial. The experiences that I'm going to be telling you about tonight pretty much all happened while I was pushing this wheelbarrow. Now, the remarkable thing is that when you go and participate as a volunteer, you might go up to someone and say, well, what do you know about this? And they tell you all this incredible information. And then they say, and how long have you been here? And they say, 2 days. There's something about the absorption of knowledge while you're there. There's something about the atmosphere, both on the pyramids and within the tunnels underneath, that we are absorbing knowledge almost like osmosis. First of all, perhaps I should go through some scientific information just to set the parameters of what it means to be a pyramid. The first thing, of course, it's got to have shapes. It's got to have three or four sides, which this does. Also, it needs to point towards the cosmic north. This is very important, that all of the principal pyramids in the world, of which there are thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands, that the north face of the pyramid faces the cosmic north. Now, Cheops' pyramid is very accurate. Many of you maybe have gone to Egypt to see the pyramids. And you may know that the orientation towards the cardinal points is very exact. In fact, Cheops' pyramid is orientated 0 degrees and 12 minutes towards the north, which is very accurate. Remarkably, when this was measured, it was found that the north slope of this structure is 0 degrees, 0 minutes, 21 seconds. So it's as perfectly orientated towards the north as that will be possible. Also, just like in Mexico and in Giza, there are other objects that all are related to each other geometrically. So here's one of them that I've just showed you, the Pyramid of the Sun. But we've also found five other structures which are clearly artificial. And they're named by Sam Osmanagic after the pyramids in Mexico. So we have the Pyramid of the Moon, the Pyramid of the Bosnian Dragon, the Pyramid of Love, and the Temple of the Mother Earth. When you take the very top, the exact top of the sun, the dragon, and the moon, lo and behold, we find an absolutely perfect equilateral triangle. And this is the first thing that really shows us that these are not hills that have been formed naturally over millions of years, but they are in fact deliberately formed or deliberately shaped. Here's another slide to show their relationship, this perfect equilateral triangle. When I was walking down, this is most of these photos, by the way, is from my own camera. On walking down, descending from the Pyramid of the Moon, I took this photograph at sunset, and a shadow pyramid appeared on my camera lens. This is the Pyramid of the Sun. The sun's going down here. This is the Temple of the Mother Earth, and I'm standing on the Pyramid of the Moon. And I looked at my camera and I thought, oh, isn't that perfect? A shadow pyramid created from the sunset. And it was almost like that the relationship between the Pyramid of the Sun at the end of the day was handing over its role to the Pyramid of the Moon at night. And it also made me realize that the invisible, or the shadow, is just as important as the visible, the real, what we believe is the real, the physical. And then when we go to other structures in this area, for example, there is a mound here that's artificial, there's a tumulus here, and another small formation here that are not pyramids, but they are artificial, and they're hollow, and I'll be showing you them later. You extend the triangle out to here, and then you draw the line from here through the Pyramid of Love, from here through the Pyramid of the Earth, and you find that there are now other triangles appearing. And so the geometry goes so deep with these structures in this valley. And really, when we're there in this valley, we realize that not just the pyramids are important, but the whole valley. And I would say that whoever created these structures obviously had an incredible reverence to the sacred land, or what I'd call the sacred landscape. There's one very important thing going to this small formation here, which is called Ginja. We find a tumulus. A tumulus is more of a mound, rather like we have in Glastonbury settles, Sidbury Hill. And this mound, when you stand on a certain stone, the Pyramid of Love coming down here exactly covers the Pyramid of the Sun. So the Pyramid of the Sun sits on top of it, rather like this. Here we are, we're standing on the stone. Here it is. This stone is probably about 30,000 years old, and it's been there for that long. And here is one of the volunteers, actually from Argentina, standing on that stone. Now, the remarkable thing is not only does it align perfectly, but if you continue, there also is a cosmic alignment. And so we went back and we found, well, which star or which cosmic system does this align to, and when? So we found actually that this 333 is alignment to the Pyramid of the Sun, but actually it's the star Deneb, which is one of the brightest glowing stars that we can still see with our naked eye far away. It could be 10,000 light years or 17,000 light years. No one's certain. But the remarkable thing is that there is, as you can see the mathematics here, that there is a perfect alignment. There was a perfect alignment 10,340 years ago, and also this year, which is remarkable. Interestingly, this, when Deneb goes down and sets behind the Pyramid of the Sun, There is another star rising, and it's Sirius. And they're on a direct line. So when Deneb is setting, Sirius is rising. And that is also in a perfect alignment. So First of all, we're wondering, how did our ancestors, how did the people or beings who constructed this sacred valley of pyramids and structures have such a precise understanding of cosmology and the stars? When we draw a circle, we can draw a circle around those, we find that there are other areas, such as the entrance to the tunnel here. Everything fits in this perfect circle. And indeed, if you're to draw circles in different locations, we can create the flower of life, with the star of life in the center. And on Lucy Pringle's site, I actually noticed that there was a lovely crop circle with the flower of life inside it, pointing towards Auden Hill. And it was actually on her website that she popped an image of the Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun on top of that crop circle. Andy, I'm sure you're aware of that one.
Indeed.
Indeed, yes. Now, I wanted also to say a little bit about how scientists became interested in this back in 2007. This is a photograph of energy, or energy vibrations, heat, rising from the Pyramid of the Sun. There's a gentleman called Dr. Harry Oldfield. He's originally a biologist, and he's developed a camera called the PIP camera, P-I-P, which photographs Curlian, rather like the Curlian photography. But it's used for biology, for medical purposes. But he's also developed a bigger camera. When he heard about the pyramids, he came out and he photographed these beautiful rays of energy and vibration rising up from the Pyramid of the Sun. And, well, of course, it's important to compare it with the natural hills, which we've done here. And you can see that the energy coming up is very horizontal, very gradual, whereas from the Pyramid of the Sun, it's almost vertical. Now, similarly, some acoustic engineers were very interested. They said, because if Dr. Harry Oldfield can photograph energy coming out of this structure, we should be able to hear it with very, very sensitive microphones that can record electromagnetic sound at higher levels of vibration. And so this team came out in 2011 and again in 2012. And what they did is they actually detected a beam of energy at 28 megahertz in the electromagnetic cycle. And it also is at an ultrasound as well. So what we're going to do now is we're going to actually listen to this as it is brought down into our hearing range, because naturally you wouldn't be able to hear it, and also you wouldn't be able to see this with our physical eyes, unless you can see infrared, which some people can. So now I'm going to ask you just to listen to this sound. When I heard it for the first time, it felt to me like my hearing was being opened to some cosmic chatter or some cosmic communication or celestial communication. The interesting thing, we have to be aware that this is still continuing. It's the same sound year in, year out. How long has it been transmitting? We don't know. Thousands of years, maybe. Where is it being transmitted to? Who's listening to it? And what's it saying? The other thing is that this beam of energy, electromagnetic energy, is actually moving out from the pyramid at the speed of light. And as it moves, it is noted that it increases in strength. Now, you remember at school, the Hertzian physics, where you shine a torch and the intensity of the beam diminishes over distance away from the object. Well, in this case, it's the reverse. It seems to be increasing as it moves up, which is possible if one understands Nikola Tesla's physics. So now I'm going to just pop up to the screen here and press this little button here so that we can hear this recording, which lasts about 20 seconds. On hearing this, the audio engineers and the archaeologists had one thought and one conclusion. This is no ordinary archaeological dig. In fact, we're dealing with something that is alive, that's working, that is perhaps at the physical level a machine doing something, transmitting something, but it is most certainly active. And so we needed to immediately realize that we need respect, we need reverence, we need to be careful not to damage anything, not to break in, not to disturb the functioning of this incredible object. The next thing we wanted to do is to find out, well, what's it made of? Is it covered with blocks of granite? Like in Egypt? No, it's not. We found actually that it's covered with cement. Actual ancient cement that's five times stronger than the strongest German concrete, that has 200% less water absorption than the best concrete, which means it's impenetrable. It's very strong concrete. I have some samples with me actually on the table that you can have a look at afterwards. It's at about a 45-degree angle. There's me. It's very steep. It's formed into rectangles, not cut, but formed. Sometimes, actually, the local gypsies who made their homes on the sides of the pyramid used dynamite so they can use it for their foundations, which means that some of it has been broken apart. But here you can see the join, and it's full of crystal. Full of quartz crystal, about 80%. When you pick a piece up that's been knocked off, you can see the crystal in it. So you can imagine this huge structure made out of crystal. The other thing is that this is Laura from Valencia in Spain, and she's a volunteer. She's been working for 6 hours in 40 degrees temperature. And what we do at the end of the day, we lie down on the concrete. Because within a couple of minutes, we're completely revived after a hard day's work. And it may be because of the water energy underneath the pyramid, but certainly just being on the pyramids is reviving in itself. It kind of brings energy into your body, rejuvenating energy. The interesting thing is the higher you get in the pyramid, the easier the work becomes. What we did halfway up, that took 3 hours in the shade, it takes us about an hour to do higher up in the full sunshine. We don't know why. There's my hand just there making a guest appearance tonight. And what I'm pointing out is this vein of crystal, quartz crystal. And so someone might say, oh, it's not a pyramid. Look, veins of crystals take millions of years to form. But wait. What it's actually doing is that this bit's been broken apart by dynamite. You can see that there's a coating of quartz crystal or a crystal solution that's almost been painted on. And then these slabs of concrete have been formed together or joined, fused together. So could the pyramid look like this? This is an artist's rendition. This is not a photograph. But we think that perhaps if we took the greenery off, it could look like that. But of course, we're not. This is the Pyramid of the Moon, by the way. We're excavating in certain places. And we found on the Pyramid of the Moon, similar, we have these slabs of concrete, but they're arranged as a terrace, starting at the top and winding their way right down to the bottom in a spiral. So if you're in a helicopter looking down, it would look like the Golden Mean, which is incredible. Here it is. You see, this is the terrace coming down here in a spiral. This is one of the tumuluses that I showed in that earlier triangular map. This is, in fact, hollow. The georadar shows there are cavities inside this hill, not a pyramid, the tumulus. And we're excavating here and here. And we found these enormous slabs, but this time the concrete is very different. It seems to have been cultured, rather like you would culture a plant, to grow, and you can see this perfect lining here. Here's the outside, and here's the inside of the slab. Coming back to the Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun, you can see what we're doing is we're taking certain isolated places on the pyramid and removing a section of the greenery and finding these ancient slabs of concrete that are covering the side. But what we're actually finding, which is most interesting, is we found a little doorway. Must remember that no one's been inside this pyramid. It's completely sealed, and we don't want to break in. Remember, this is alive. This is a working structure. So we mustn't tamper. We must be careful. But we have found this place here, which is a little crack on, rather like, you know, working here. It suddenly appeared. This is a water bottle that I've left there just to show the size of it. You can just about get your arm in, and when you poke your head in, you can feel a cool breeze coming out from the inside. And here you can see, it's very hot, by the way, working here in the summer. We're trying to get in. And what we've actually done here, this is one of the archaeologists, the head archaeologist from Italy, Riccardo, and this is Alfredo, also from Italy, with some ropes and pulleys. We've been able to remove one slab to try to get inside the pyramid. We didn't get inside, but what we did find was a leaf that had been pressed against this slab and the inside. So we, marvelous, for the first time, we've got some carbon, some material that we can actually date. So we can do carbon dating. And so we sent off this impression of a leaf, and they came back with something very, very shocking, which means, according to our history books, this pyramid doesn't actually exist. And the reason is that it's been dated at 24,800 years, plus or minus 200 years. We sent it also to two other labs, and they came back with the same information. Oh, and they also said, where did you get this? It's impossible. This is very, very, very important because it means, by the way, it doesn't mean that the pyramid is 24,800 years old. It means that this leaf settled on it 24,800 years ago and stayed there and was covered with some mud or something and then was pressed down. That means that at the earliest, this pyramid is 24,800 years old. But it could be much, much older, which also means that we have to change our minds, change our history books, change the way that we think about our species, because the way that we're taught at school is that our ancestors were primitive, that they had very little information. They were hunters and gatherers and cave dwellers. But actually now we suddenly need to understand that 25,000 years ago, perhaps before the last ice age, our ancestors were actually highly advanced beings of great intelligence, wisdom, and compassion. It also, of course, when we come back to this time, we suddenly find ourselves being aligned with many of the mythologies all over the world. The Hindu creator of the swastika here, the Mayan calendar of the galactic center, the crop circles, Hawaiian, Tibetan, and of course the planetary alignment. Coming back to the pyramid, so we're now very keen to force our way in, because everyone's getting really, can you imagine the excitement building up? We're going to get into the pyramid. What's in there? What are we going to discover? And so we're trying to hack our way in with pickaxes. Unfortunately, after the end of the day, this was the damage of the pickaxes. Damage to the concrete, zero. So we got a very high-powered drill. And by this time, I was starting to feel really uncomfortable because I just felt we mustn't violate this structure because it goes beyond our understanding of what is really happening. But don't worry, the pyramid is much bigger than us. First of all, the generator blew up. Then they got a new generator. Then the cable melted. And then they got a new cable, and you can see his expression here. That the bit basically stripped down. By the way, this machine here would dig up our road outside in 5 minutes. They were going for 3 hours solid. They removed about half an inch of concrete. That's all. So whoever built these pyramids, or fashioned an existing hill to form the proportions of the pyramid, we don't know which yet, whether it was built from the ground up or whether it was fashioned, did it in such a way that it's absolutely inviolable and impenetrable. And the reason for that is what's inside and what's happening inside that I'm going to be telling you about at the end of the lecture. I also wanted to mention that around the pyramids there are extraordinary spherical objects, these spheres or balls. This is Nenad, one of the researchers from Bosnia. Here they are. What are they doing? When you touch them like this, this is Rita from Portugal, she's a PhD student, you can feel that they're actually vibrating inside. There's this very, very subtle energy or vibration, and they feel good just to lean against them like that. They feel very nourishing, like they bring this lovely energy into your heart. One of the intuitives that were there said, oh, these are used for anti-gravity. That they spin and they use for anti-gravity. But I was very, very fortunate to be working with a gentleman called Tim Moon, who's an archaeologist from New Zealand, and he was one of the original archaeologists in Easter Island, and he was involved with the unearthing of the Easter Island statues and, of course, digging down to reveal their full form. And Tim said, you guys have got it all wrong. That little crack in the pyramid wall, that's on the north face. You idiots. Why are you excavating on the north face? Because the priests, the civilization, the culture would have revered the sun. The sun would have been incredibly important for their rituals, for their observances. You've got to look for an entrance on a side that is bathed in the sun most of the day. So we went round to the back. This is a path that leads halfway up. And there are two of the lads, two of the volunteers. And what we found, more little stones there, and apart from this green rubbish bag, what we found is like a plateau or a promenade leading right up halfway, rather like this. This is what it looks like. So this is the north face, where we found the little opening. This is round the back, but this is probably what it looked like 10,000 or more years ago. And this, can you imagine, this is where the priests or those people responsible for the maintenance and observances of the sacred science of the pyramids would perhaps walk, as the great priests perhaps in the Mexican pyramids would have done. Rather like at Stonehenge. Oh, this is the inner circle of Stonehenge, but of course the earthworks around Stonehenge are enormous, and perhaps the priests too would have had a procession towards the inner Stonehenge. When we go up in an aeroplane, there's a gentleman called Klaus Donner who visited. He's an Austrian researcher, and he hired an aeroplane, and he brought up a very powerful georadar camera, which is used for a variety of purposes, perhaps for oil exploration and many other purposes. But his purpose was to see, are there any passageways? He says, I will not believe that this is a pyramid until I see passageways and chambers. Because, of course, in the pyramids in Egypt, there are chambers, there are passageways, and they're all incredibly important and mathematically aligned. So this is what he found. That there are seven levels of passageways and seven chambers. Of course, everyone immediately said, oh, seven chakras. But there are seven chambers. And these passageways are open, but we can't get to them as of yet. And I think what we're doing is we're waiting to feel that we have the permission to find the entrance point. But one thing that you can enter is through sound, rather like we listen to the sound on the top. We can also bring those microphones, those highly sensitive microphones, and walk around where these chambers are on the inside, but stand on the outside, and see if you can hear anything. So what we've done is I'm going to play you a sound that is recorded in the proximity of one of the larger chambers that's been detected by the geo-radar camera of Klaus Donner. And again, I'm going to switch off my mic and just let you experience this sound, which is quite different. The difference with this sound is that it moves around and it comes and goes, whereas the sound that I played you earlier is constant and fixed. So here we go. This worked at home. If it doesn't work now, I'll go to the source file at the end of the lecture and play it to you. Oh, have the bagpipes instead. So I'm sorry about that. My technology has let me down, but I will go back at the end and go to the source file to play that for you. The reason why I went on to the Scottish bagpipes here, this is Vanessa from just outside of Brighton. And
Alfriston,
yes. And Vanessa came out with me and a few others. And she is an ex-policewoman, and she's found that she got sick, actually, while she was working for the police, and she found that one of her healing attributes was learning to play an instrument, and she retuned the bagpipes to the solfeggio scale. She brought the bagpipes with her, and she, when she saw the pyramid, she realised why she had come and why she had brought the bagpipes, because the bagpipes are always associated with war, but typically as an instrument of, as a musical instrument of war. So she said, if I were to play the bagpipes in the solfeggio scale from my heart, then the sounds would go up and in through that energy beam and down into the ley lines and spread out to the scarred battlefields of Bosnia, and hence to Europe, and heal the scars of the battle, and also move through the ley lines to Scotland to heal the scars of the battles in Scotland. So to hear her bagpipes was very haunting as it spread through the valley. Now I want to move into the tunnels. By the way, I am moving quickly, so I really want to get to the conclusions tonight by about 10 o'clock, and we've got about 35 minutes to go, so I'm moving quite quickly. But do interrupt me if you have any questions. It is important that there are tunnels, and the reason is that both in Egypt and many other places in the world where there are pyramids, tunnels are found. For example, in Egypt, in fact, this was the Sunday Telegraph newspaper in 1935, an article came out about having discovered tunnels underneath and between the pyramids in Giza. We haven't heard much about it since 1935, but this was an article, was a diagram made by someone. Now, this actually is a typical diagram of the tunnels. This is the entrance here that we've so far excavated, and I'm going to explain that in a minute. This is me getting ready to go into the tunnels to do the work with a little crash helmet and light on. So I'm going to now imagine, if you will, you are coming with me and entering these tunnels and to discover what's inside them, because what's in the tunnels actually provides the secret of the purpose and the function of the pyramids. So we're going down, first of all. We're very far below ground. We're about 70 feet below ground. And the first thing that we notice is the air is fantastic. It's clear, it's cool. The deeper we go, the fresher the air becomes. It's at a constant 11 to 12 degrees Celsius. But there's something about it. You know when you go to a forest or by the ocean and you feel breathe in that wonderful feeling that makes you feel more alive, more vibrant? It's the negative ions. And inside these tunnels, the negative ions are at about 43 to 50,000 negative ions per cubic centimeter, which is actually very high, because here they would be about 800, 700. By the ocean, perhaps 2,000. So degree or the concentration of negative ions in these tunnels is 43 to 50 times greater. And what that means to us is that these tunnels have a healing nature about them. They clear the lungs, they bring oxygen to the brain, they make you feel more relaxed. But the interesting thing is that very soon after you go in, you find that actually there are many tunnels leading off that have been blocked or closed down. Do you see this? This has been blocked. This has been blocked. It's been filled in. After some analysis, we found that actually, for some reason, the tunnels have been completely filled in and closed down. By doing analysis on some small areas of carbon, we found that the filling was done about 5,000 years ago. And it seems to have been done very rapidly and very thoroughly. Can you see there's not any breathing space up there? It's almost like that, if you wanted to close down some tunnels, you just collapse the entrance so people can't get in. But if you want to stop for all times people gaining access to what's inside, you would fill all the tunnels rammed with earth. I don't know whether we could do that today, but somehow 5,000 years ago they were able to do it. Here you can see that we've started to remove the filling, exposing the original tunnels. And these tunnels are far more ancient than 5,000 years. 5,000 years ago, they were filled for some reason. Perhaps it was because there was something in the tunnels that the civilization at the time did not want to be made available or wanted to hide. Or perhaps it was some technology that they wanted to close down. Here you see we've started to excavate one side tunnel, leaving this side tunnel with the filling in place. And these are two ladies from Spain. You can see they're very happy, and they've got the wheelbarrow job. So what they're doing is there's someone digging and someone filling the wheelbarrow, and then we have to take it all the way to the entrance, and then some people are emptying it and sifting through just to see if we can find anything. So here is a typical wheelbarrow load. You can see that the finances of the Bosnian foundation are not very good. The old equipment's really awful. Now, the next fascinating thing is that this is the ceiling of the tunnels. These stones are just hanging there once we remove the filling. And remarkably, we find they're the same type of stones, the color, the shape, as the concrete. So it seems that whoever built the pyramids used the original extraction from the ground to form the concrete. So they must have been one of the first eco-friendly civilizations on the planet to source all their materials locally.
How did you remove the filling?
Pardon?
How did you remove the filling?
With a shovel.
So it's not that solid, it's not?
Oh no, it just removes, naturally, it just breaks away. So it's very easy just to remove it. It isn't, there's no filling, there's no cement. It's just rammed full. But when you start removing it, but it would take, well, we're about 1.5 kilometers away from the pyramid. So going at our rate, it would take about 25 years to reach the pyramid, going the rate we're going at the moment. But there's a surprise in store. I just wanted to tell you this, that once removed, we find this beautiful self-supporting structure of the pyramids. So the interesting thing here is that on one of the digs where I was, there was an earthquake. Quite a severe earthquake, actually. Nothing, not too much damage. But we were all shaking outside and thought, oh my God, the volunteers that are inside the tunnels, are they all right? This has been an earthquake. So then a little while later, they came out smiling. I said, you okay? And I said, yes. So did the earthquake? And they said, what earthquake? Mm-hmm. And so the structure, the integral structure of the tunnels is so strong that you don't even feel an earthquake underneath. And that's how. And now we're really getting reverence and respect for the beings or people who built these tunnels.
What was the magnitude of the earthquake?
On the Richter scale?
Yeah.
Don't know, about 2, 2.5, something like that. If you were to ask, well, have we found any artifacts? Have we found any pharaohs or thrones or anything? No, it's completely stripped bare of any artifacts, apart from some. We found this little votive pyramid, and we gave it to the local pyramid, the local museum, who then turned it upside down and said it's a cup. And actually, if you go back to the museum, it's not there anymore. We also found this rather interesting-looking mask or stone that looks like a mask. Notice the little indentations there as well, showing energy. But what's really interesting is that we're finding, as we are removing the filling, we are finding these ceramic megaliths. These are quite large. They're about the size of this table. Here's another one, egg-shaped. And again, rather like the balls, you can feel energy. I sat by one, and my leg just touched the outside of it, and I felt this vortex of energy going right up inside me, and all the hairs on my legs stood out on end. It's next to one here. Interestingly, when photographers with this GeoRadar camera took an image of this, they found that actually this is a top, and this is a base, and it's actually hollow. And inside, there seems to be an object, an oval object, that is vibrating about the size of my hand. Quite remarkable. So this is one again. You see he's holding his hand out to feel. You can feel the energy coming out of them. A little bit was taken, sacrificed, a little bit chipped off in various places, and sent for analysis. And the analysis came back that these are actually not natural stones. They are ceramic. They're polymer ceramic. They've been manufactured, which is quite remarkable. And they also said, where did you get them from? And we told them, they said, that's impossible. And we called them back, they said, what samples? But anyway.
What country was that?
No, Poland, Italy, and the UK. In the UK, they said, what samples? Now, I want to tell you something about this. First of all, this big one is glued, rather like that the quartz glue, onto a base. So whoever put this megalith there did not want it to be moved an inch to the right or an inch to the left. And that's very important because we found that each one of these megaliths is actually directly positioned over a very powerful and large underground subterranean source of moving water, a river, an underground river. And particularly where that river hits another rock or divides, there is a physical source of energy in that water that's being absorbed by these megaliths and then gradually released into the tunnels. And we believe that that vibrating object inside the pyramid here is actually what it's doing. Sorry, this is jumping. Is actually transforming that physical energy into an electromagnetic field. And then as it radiates out into the tunnels and it interacts and moves against the crystal, the quartz crystal, in some of the round stones in the tunnel, it's creating a sonic vibration. And that's one of the attributes of the healing capabilities of the tunnels. Anyone who goes into a tunnel feels a healing, feels rejuvenation. And also, some scientists have actually measured, you can't read this at the back, I'm sure, Curry lines, Hartmann net, ley lines, Schumann waves, black lines, power grid, cell phone radiation, water, extraterrestrial radiation, and found wherever there was a negative source of energy, negative in the sense that it would be depleting for the human body, make you sick, such as having black water run underneath your house, and if you sleep there for a long time, you get sleep disturbance. All of those are transmuted into a positive healing energy. In other words, just to be, just to meditate, as these two ladies are doing from Portugal, in the tunnels, or just to be there, just working, moving a wheelbarrow for 6 hours a day, is that there's nothing there that would be deleterious to the human physiology or mind. In other words, the body will have a chance to start repairing itself, to start healing itself. Before I went, I had a very bad back, which healed. And I thought, oh my gosh, they're giving me the wheelbarrow job? And I got a bad back. The more I went in there with that wheelbarrow, the stronger my back became, and it's been healed since then. Also, the experience of claustrophobia. I remember I once was standing here, and I thought, am I going to get claustrophobia? We're 70 feet below, the ceiling is here. The moment I had that thought, I felt that something took that thought and took it away from me and replaced it with the thought, you're safe, you're being held. And at that moment, I started to feel I'm not the only being here. We are not the only beings here. There are other forms of life here. Perhaps we can't see, perhaps we can. But it also reinstills the feeling that we need to have reverence while we're working here. In fact, after a while, I started to knock on the front, saying, hello, 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 I'm coming in with a pure heart. In friendship, may I come in? And when I felt a shift, then I would go in. Some of the tunnels are filled with water. By the way, I wanted to show this slide. These are the round stones that are filled with crystal, that electromagnetic energy is moving towards and against and with and creating that sonic vibration, which is above the range of hearing, but also it's not above the range of hearing of animals, and animals will not go in these tunnels. Here is again these beautiful walls. These are a number of tunnels that are deep inside that have not been filled. At the end of last year, we broke through for the first time, and we found beautiful tunnels, perfectly intact, with no filling, and we were able to walk freely through them with someone at the end. And so, gosh, you can't say these are natural tunnels. These have been built for some reason by some intelligence. Look at that, isn't that beautiful? You can see a sort of canal. This is a little orb. I love orbs. You sometimes catch them on cameras. Here we are, going around a corner. Where is it going? Who made it? This is underwater. Some of them are completely filled with water. More orbs appearing in the camera. Well, we started, there was one gentleman called Janis Pilko, who also has an incredible camera. Is called a GDV camera, which transfers the Kirlian photography, rather like if you to hold up your hand, you can see the aura around it, onto a computer spectral analysis. So he measured 108 people to find out what's going on when people go in these tunnels. How is their aura, their energetic field, being changed? This is just a little description about this, bioenergies, physical and mental. You see here. So any organic material you can photograph with this camera, it's called Kirlian photography. Some of you may have heard about it. And so this is a typical result. This is before entering for the first time. You see the aura or the energy field is broken in this person in various places. here particularly, maybe there's some damage to the knee at some part of their life. After 1 hour, they had the curling photography redone, and you can see that the energy field has become whole again, just after 1 hour of being in the tunnels. The mental energies has become settled and more balanced. So both on the physical and the mental levels, we start to be healed within the first hour that we enter these extraordinary ancient tunnels. Also, he measured the energies in the area of the seven chakras. And in each case, there was an increase. I noticed that the greatest increase was in the fifth chakra, which is quite interesting, the throat chakra. And I read up on one book that actually that's the first chakra where one begins to vibrate spiritually. And I thought, well, that's very appropriate. We also find these delightful beings everywhere. This is a lady from Barcelona, and this kept on appearing above her head whenever I took a photograph of her. And also they seem to want to guide us. This one was hovering over when I took the photograph of one of the megaliths. They're beautiful. Some people say that they're just an infraction of light on the camera lens, but these kept on appearing and in certain places. And I do believe that these orbs that we capture on a camera are very special. Now, the next thing we found, there's writing. There are inscriptions on these megaliths, ancient, that seem to correspond with ancient European runes or runic language. And I must say that, well, you may remember that when the American NASA sent up Voyager, they put a little brass plaque on it. This is the brass plaque that showed where we are in the solar system, what our species look like, where we've come from, and various biological codings to tell with any intelligence out there in the universe happens to pick up Voyager, they'll be able to look at this brass plaque and work out through symbols who we are and where we came from. Maybe they found it already. So just like that, could these be symbols that this ancient civilization, these ancient beings, may have left to communicate with us through time? There are a number. Symbols is the language of magic. Anyone who specializes in runes will tell you that runes are not normal language. They can be multidimensional, they can be magical. And so when we look at these symbols that appear throughout the tunnels, there are actually similarities. There are just three, for example, that we found in this one here, the Laguz, which talks about the life energy beneath the collective unconsciousness, unconscious mental process, love as unity, or life energy. And then there's the Tiwas, meaning decisions, direction, rationality, justice over imbalance, the well-being of the whole society. And the Kinas, which is about controlled energy, transformation. So just in this one rune, are they telling us that actually what these tunnels have is a source of energy that's unbounded, that's for the good of society, that can be directed towards our benefit? There are also other inscriptions. Now, these are interesting because they're on a line, which means that these runes could have an analytical meaning, or they could have a meaning when taken and joined together. So using the runic characters, some runic experts, runologists, if that's the right word, took this line and worked out what does it mean, and they came up with an answer after many, many hours of analysis using the runic characters. And this is what it is. The gateway is closed, we are at a standstill. We will have to act as warriors to defend and conquer until we move again through the Stargate. And when we read that, suddenly everything made sense. That in fact, this pyramid, these tunnels, does have a cosmic connection. That it is indeed a very powerful gateway or transportation device. When we look at the beam coming out of the pyramid of the sun, yes, that's electromagnetic and sonic energy, but perhaps it's also a transportation device. Perhaps one can use that as the basic carrier beam on which to layer other sorts of information, such as radar, infrared, and let that be carried to as a transmitter of information to another galaxy, to another part of our galaxy, and perhaps even for transportation. And so suddenly we find this statement in these ancient runic language that something has happened. And as soon as we saw this, we said, this is why the tunnels were blocked. It was blocked because there was some sort of incursion, there was some sort of danger in the environs at that time, that everything had to be closed down and shut down. And actually, when you look at the way that tunnels have been filled, it's almost as if they were filled from the outside to the inside. And so the people or beings who filled the tunnels remained on the inside voluntarily and were left behind these walls. And here we are, we can see them. This is what we call the anomaly, the fog anomaly, that moves sometimes in front of a camera lens. It moves by itself. It moves against the breeze. There it goes. Here's another one. Here's another one. Sometimes taking different forms. Unlike the little, what are they called, orbs, which have this lovely, friendly, delightful feeling about them, these do not. These have a serious, stern, like they're watching you. The first time I saw one, I was pushing my wheelbarrow, and a piece of fog came up and stood there, and so I sort of blew at it, like that, and trying to get it out of the way, but it didn't move. Mm. And then it did. And so immediately I said, oh, excuse me, I didn't mean to insult you by blowing on you. Again, it informed me about how important it is to realize that we're not alone. We're not the only beings here, or perhaps anywhere. And our feeling in the last 100 years or so that we are an insular species, that we are the only species in creation, perhaps we need to rethink that we are not insular. Also, I wanted to share a little bit about a project that we're working on, that we found a structure underneath the ground. Going back again, here's the structure. It looks like a diamond shape. When we look at it, a diagram, it looks like that. It could be a shaft going even deeper underground. Yeah. And in fact, again, these acoustic noises were measured with the sonic microphones. And we found that, well, it was the middle of the night. We recorded a sound around 10 p.m., similar to a clockwork moving. Now, this sound, which I actually have on my computer, which, if we do have time, I can play later, or it's on the website. You can actually Google this to save time, because we are approaching 10 o'clock now. If you Google strange acoustics in Ravni tunnels, you'll be able to listen to this sound. When I first heard it, I thought, that sounds like a mechanical device deep, deep into the earth. Deeper than we could imagine. And it sounded like it was moving. And I looked at my colleague who said, well, you have heard of the inner earth civilization, haven't you? And I said, yeah, but I don't believe that. But when you hear this sound, which you can do on YouTube, just Google that, maybe we should rethink whether perhaps there is a civilization beneath us. In which case, it's even more important for us to be incredibly respectful when we work in this area. Incredibly respectful. One night, we weren't. And there was a very dramatic effect that happened after that. You see, Ricardo and one of the Bosnian full-time workers were always arguing. They could never agree with each other. His name is Zombie. Actually, his real name is Admir. At school, he was called Zombie, but he's now called Zombie. So Zombie and Ricardo were arguing one night. Ricardo comes from the Orthodox archaeological tradition. Admir, Zombie, is an intuitive. He is a geomancer. He uses the dowsing arts. And he can hear tunnels. He can hear spaces. He's a very intuitive. And he actually told me that the guardians of the tunnels and pyramids tell him where we should excavate. But that's another thing. One night, they started to argue. Ricardo went down to the bottom of this tunnel, and Zombie went to the other end, and they said, well, you go down that way, I'll go down this way, and we'll just sit and see if we can hear any new tunnels or get any information. And they said, okay. After a lot of adversity between these two. Later that night, they came back to the hotel, and I saw Ricardo. He was sheet white. He was absolutely shaking. I said, Ricardo, what's happened? What's happened? And he said, I can't tell you. I said, come on, tell me. Sit down. And he said, something's happened in the tunnels tonight. And I said, well, can you tell me? He said, well, I heard a sound. I said, can you tell me what it was? And he said, well, I was at one end of this tunnel, and Zombie was the other end. And suddenly I heard a growling, a very, very fierce and very frightening growling. And I called out, I said, Zombie, is that you? And he said, no, I thought it was you. And then the growling came again and again and again. And I said, well, what did it sound like? And he said, well, it was sort of a rrrr like that. And I said, well, did you hear anything or any footsteps? He said, no. Were any splashing around in the water? No. Well, where did the sound come from? It was, he said, as if the walls of the tunnels were vibrating with this menacing, frightening sound. Well, how do you feel now? I said, absolutely terrified. And here's a grown man who's been into the pyramids and all over the place and not frightened by anything. I immediately contacted one of my colleagues in England who's very intuitive, and I said, well, what is this? And she said, I believe it is the enmity and conflict between these two men manifesting, as if their conflict has come to life in these tunnels. So it shows that that's the power of our thinking and emotionality, and again, why we need to show respect. There's Ricardo. He's smiling now. But what we did, we were very gifted to have some very wonderful, very heartfelt volunteers. And the next morning, I told them what had happened. And I said, look, Ricardo had this experience. What should we do? And then without question, all of the volunteers said, we need to give an offering of love to the guardians of the tunnels. So we decided to bring some flowers. And we put some flowers at the entrance of the tunnels. And then Susie here said, well, we should also bring, I got a little heart that I bought from Spain, you know, one of these little heart-shaped stones. And she brought that and we put it right into the place where the growling had been heard, just at the outside. And later that day, she came out and she found on the ground a large heart-shaped stone and picked it up. And said, look what I found, a heart-shaped stone. And immediately I said, well, that shows that the guardians have accepted your gift. And it's okay for us to proceed. Later that day, this is Pilar, or Pili. So then, having given our gift of love and asked for permission, things started to happen. Pilly had started to break down crying, so she was pushing the wheelbarrow, weeping, with a tourist going by, what's going on? And she explained to me through an interpreter, she only speaks Spanish, that she had an experience of a tidal wave of love sweeping through the tunnels and going through her heart as if she'd been in love the first time multiplied by 1,000 times. And then this happened to another person and another person. So it seemed that we were being given a gift of the stone, but also a wave of spiritual love washed in and out of the tunnels. And it's almost as if Pili, looking into her eyes at this moment, had experienced that sense of infinity within the tunnels. During the day, this is me, by the way, during the day, I would go back in and just lie there. This is a very narrow opening into the new tunnels, or the new opening to the ancient tunnels, just to hear, is there anything still there? And it was all peaceful. It was all quiet. I could look here. Look at these beautiful tunnels. This is water. It's like a mirror. It's so pure. The actual water has been sitting there for, 10,000 years, and it's drinkable. It's healing water. And here is, perhaps someone come to watch me has just come round the corner, this fog. A little bit further down, we found something quite extraordinary. We found tracks. No one has been in these tunnels. We've just broken through, first time in 5,000 years. So these tracks could be 5,000 years old or more. Tracks. But there are no feet, footsteps. This has been untouched for thousands of years. So it looks like some sort of vehicle, cart or wheels. This is the track blown up with my camera zoomed right in there. There are no footmarks. But in that narrow, the tunnels are about this high. Perhaps the person, the being, or the entity that was working in the tunnels 10,000 years ago or longer was lying on top for some reason. But the weight of the wheels, when analysed, means that it couldn't be more than about 40 kilos in weight. So wherever the beings were that manufactured these tunnels, they were very small and quite light. The other interesting thing is we found these marks on the walls, and this is a close-up, you can't quite see, but there are three claw marks like that. And we keep on finding them in the tunnels. Not five fingers, but three in that direction. So we call them the three claw marks. I do not have an answer to this. This is unexplained and unexplainable. I don't think it can ever be explained. But we can only imagine that whether they were human or not, we don't know. But what we do know, coming back to science, is that they did have a function. This is a Croatian scientist's summary, that he has found and measured that negative ion, that healing energy, is being drawn from these tunnels and pushed up through the top of the pyramid to move the harmonic balancing effects of the negative ions up into the atmosphere. The interesting thing is that they come in here and they go up. This is perhaps why there is this such strong concrete on the outside, is to make sure that this is a very powerful device. During the weekdays, by the way, when the factories were belching out smoke, which they do without any regulation in Bosnia, the amount of ions coming out, being pushed out, measured by this scientist, were very, very strong indeed. Whereas on a Sunday, where all the factories are closed down, the pyramid kind of decreases the emission of these health-giving ions out into the ionosphere. So not only is this pyramid active, but also it's self-regulating according to the requirement of the atmosphere. So now we're suddenly thinking, What is the purpose of these original pyramids? Is it to create a harmonious environment for us to live in the world? And perhaps are many pyramids around the world originally placed on our planet by some very benign, intelligent, and compassionate beings in order to create a stable living environment on the planet for us? And if we were but to be able to utilize that technology, could we also perpetuate our civilization without pollution, with perhaps free energy today?
That's telling you something.
If I plug my battery in, can I have 5 more minutes to bring the conclusion?
You can have 5.
All right. Can
I have an assistant? Why is it not the front? There's back here.
Well, it's actually, all this time, it's not being plugged in. So I think we'll just run through that last 7%. We'll do it. Where's the mic? So if we were to go back
in time and get some advice from our near ancestors, perhaps 3,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago, and look, what were they telling us? What are they drawing? That we find jewellery, we find these megaliths outside that are several thousands of years old, this is recently discovered, showing this force of energy coming out into the pyramidal shape. This is the a transmission of energy with the swirling energies here. Here's another one. These are more recent in our history. So perhaps we go back in a time machine by looking at these. This perhaps could indicate tunnels and a vortex of energy being pushed up. Rather like Pythagoras, another more recent ancestor, saying that the purpose of the pyramid is to manifest infinite existence within the finite. And I really love that definition of a pyramid. More we're finding, but this is very interesting. If that's what they said the pyramid is, this top bit, what's all this? Deep below the pyramid. And what is this spiral symbolism? What's this down here? Well, learning from that, our recent ancestors and these monoliths and the inscriptions on them, again, the sonic engineers went to work. But this time what they did is they induced a signal into the pyramid down as to trigger to see whether there was a response. So this was a highly scientific experiment done over 3 weeks. And what they found was that the source of the energy is actually 1.8 miles underneath the pyramid, and it's bouncing off a very large layer of metal, could be gold, could be steel, and it's bouncing right back up at a much higher rate. So what actually is happening is that this energy is coming in and it's being pushed out at 500 times the speed and strength, and it's actually creating a constant 10 kilowatt power. And this is also very interesting that we've seen this. And here's the seed of life above the pyramid. And this, I love this, the apertures of the sky windows are open for you. The movements of sunshine are released for you. So what we have to understand, and this is the end, Andy, that a pyramid is not just what we see on top. It's what's underneath. And it's the dynamism within it. And I'd like to end by saying that our ancestors or beings who blessed this planet with the pyramid technology not only were giving us an environment stabilizing technology, which is free energy, but also they were using the pyramidal energy as an expression of consciousness, as an element of the creation. That this is in fact a universal form, a universal technology, that on this planet, and maybe many other planets in the universe, have this divine technology of pyramid energy. And perhaps we can find them all over the world. Thank you very much. I apologise that I've gone over. Please contact me at nigel-grace.com or two websites. Thank you very much.
Fantastic stuff.
I think the Guardians were okay with that.
I think they're right. Just two very brief questions. Who is sort of organising the day-to-day running of the dig? Is it like a communal sort of decision going on here? You know, who decides what's going to be dug through next?
It's very communal. In fact, there's a very lively debate. Not everyone agrees with each other. There is a organisation of volunteers that you can join. There is an announcement coming soon about 2013, summer camp, for all age groups. And it's all on the website that you will see on the bottom line here. Just write that down. Also, if you'd just like to pick one of my cards.
Which are here, on the table at the front.
And then just text me or send me an email, and I'd be very happy to put you into contact with the volunteers organisation or answer any other questions that you may have by email.
And one last thing to say. So, obviously, the world of official archaeology does not believe this exists, or we probably would have heard about it. What's their take on it? I mean, the tunnels, as you say, are unquestionably tunnels. What is the take, or are they blanking it entirely?
They're originally very interested, and then some archaeologists came over from Egypt, and then they went back and lost their jobs because they said it was real. Then British archaeologists came out and drove around and said, no, it's natural, it's a natural hill. And he says that what the volunteers are doing is they're taking a natural hill and shaping it to look like a pyramid.
But I mean, that doesn't explain the tunnels, even if you put that out of the picture. I mean, so they have no opinion, basically.
Many say that the tunnels are naturally formed through the passage of water. Now that we've found the tracks underneath, perhaps they might think again. More and more archaeologists are coming forward, as are some of the local people, and coming forward to say, this is important. So I think that perhaps in the next few years, we'll see more recognition of these important. Personally, I believe it's the most important archaeological excavation in the world, but that we must understand it, not only through the physical and the historical, but also the psychological, energetic, and spiritual realms, in order to truly understand it.
Can I just ask you, can I put you mentioned the leaf that was found? Was that found in the crack where you were drilling?
I'm not quite sure. It was either in the crack or when we removed the stone, it was there.
Right.
But it was through sifting down. It was on my shift, actually.
But we did, the next shift, actually get through that crack.
The next shift lifted up that stone, but we haven't got any further in there. The pyramid will... Did they get in?
They put the camera down.
Oh, they've put the camera down.
Yes.
But I didn't have the photography for that.
Well, before we thank Nigel, I just want to say two things. A, be careful on your way back. It's obviously wild and windy out there, so drive carefully, go carefully. Thank you for being here. There's another year done of these meetings. We've got some pretty good speakers lined up for next year, but can't tell you exactly who's doing which date yet, but we'll be back 21st of March. If you're not on our list and you want to be, at the back there on the stand, there is a thing you can write your email address down or postal if you don't have an email address, and you'll find out about our coming meetings. Two more things to say. If anybody wants to come for a drink, a few of us will pop over to the Potters in a minute, just over the road there. And if anybody's on an orange chair, if you can stack them up against the wall, that would really help us. But mostly, I'd really like to say that's an amazing evening. I'm sure you're really glad that you came out for that. I certainly feel much more informed about this. So, Nigel, what can I say? Thank you so much indeed.
And in 2013, I hope to come back with a cinema movie of the end of the Mayan calendar and the beginning of the new era from the Pyramid of the Sun. So watch out for that.
Thank you, everybody. Good night. Thank you for coming.
Well, that was an excellent talk, and I must say it was one of the most powerful I've ever heard, and I came away from that particular presentation feeling on a high and feeling elevated, and I intuitively just felt that there was something to this and it needs to be heard, and this information does need to get out there. So I'd urge all of our listeners to research this, look into it, and spread the word about the Bosnian pyramids, because it's a travesty, really, that this isn't getting the media attention that I think it deserves. Certainly, the attention it needs from the archaeologist societies around the world. Now, by way of an outro, I'm going to play some of the sound files that Nigel discussed in his speech. The first one is one of the ones that he did manage to play, but perhaps we'll be able to hear it with slightly more clarity if I play it in isolation now. And this is the sound of the 28 megahertz beam apparently emitting itself from the tip of the pyramid into space. So let's give this a listen. The second sound I'm going to play is one that Nigel didn't get a chance to play during his presentation, and this is a sound that was emitting from the side of the pyramid as opposed to the top, and this is a slightly more electronical sound, perhaps very strange, almost human-like sound, the kind of sound that you'd expect to hear as part of a mobile phone antenna, perhaps something constructed. So let's give this a listen. So there we go. So that brings us to the end of this particular episode of The Information. There are two versions of this particular episode. There is an enhanced podcast version and a standard MP3 version. If you own an iOS device such as an iPhone or iPad or iPod Touch, I urge you to check out our enhanced version of this particular episode. The difference being is that in the enhanced version, you actually see images appear on your device during the audio presentation, and those images are exact slides from the talk. Nigel was kind enough to supply me with those particular slides, and they play in the exact order and the right timings to go with the talk. So if you have a compatible device, I urge you to check that out. And thanks again for listening, and have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Nations, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.